This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the ball on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant. We're going to be joined by Brock Heward. Talk us through some of the deeper lessons from that Super Bowl. Looking into it, it's very interesting. Bashaud Breeland was a free agent acquisition last year. $1 million signing bonus, $2 million salary, one-year deal, so he's back out on the market. Also, Chris Jones is expected to be a free agent. It'll be interesting to see what Kansas City does. I don't think it's necessarily going to be easy for Seattle to make changes, but I guess when I look at Kansas City's defense, what I think is that it doesn't take that much to get from being a bad defense to being an okay defense. Like, that's possible to do in offseason. I don't think you can make a leap toward being a top 10 defense. I think that takes years to build. But I think you can go from being bad to being all right. I think you can do that in a few months.
It's going to be hard, though, and they need to find actual playmakers, both on the defensive line, which they thought they'd had in Ziggy Ansah this offseason. They clearly didn't. And thought they were getting an LJ Collier, drafting him in the first round. They didn't get that, at least yet. And then the defensive backfield, I don't know who they get that is more of a playmaker at cornerback, but they're going to need, I think, someone in that department as well to help raise the level of play from those guys.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. We got Brock Heward with us for Blue 42.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Morning, Brock. How are you?
I'm doing good. My little Titus and his Patrick Mahomes jersey yesterday was a little anxious. In that fourth quarter, did not know if they'd have the juice to get the game, but they did. So we had a happy camper last night. Pretty entertaining, compelling game, and certainly plenty to talk about.
It did seem at one point like San Francisco was actually going to be able to pull it off, especially with how much Patrick Mahomes seemed to struggle the first three quarters. Brock, what was the biggest play of Super Bowl 54, and how did it happen?
Yeah, the one that's going to kick Robert Saleh in San Francisco this entire offseason was that 3rd and 15 with 7 minutes to go. 3rd and 15, they just reviewed another missed throw by Mahomes to Tyreek Hill. It had him open on a deep curl. He throws it low. It goes between his legs. They turn it over. It's 3rd and 15. And I've never seen, Daniel Jeremiah tweeted it this morning, and I tweeted about it last night. I've never seen a quarterback in the shotgun take a nine-step drop, but that's exactly what Mahomes did. It was like Super Tecmo Bowl when I used to drop back with Dan Marino and back and back and back and back and throw it like 80 yards. Mahomes took a nine-step drop off of the shotgun snap. He ended up 14 yards behind the line of scrimmage. And it was a good thing he did because the Niners run a stunt and he'd have been once again sacked or harassed. But he drops way, 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 way back. And that corner, Mosley, busts his coverage. They're playing three deep. And all he's got to do is stay deep in his third outside zone. He does not. He tried to be a hero and jump the end cut that was already covered by the linebacker. And it vacated the zone that Tyreek Hill then ran the corner route into. And if that play does not happen, I don't think the Chiefs win. I think they're going to punt on 4th and 15. There's 7 minutes to go at that point. I would then think Shanahan would finally run the ball three straight times, which he decided not to do in the second half. I think that game's over. But instead, a huge mental bust from San Francisco defensively. Mahomes throws it up. Tyreek makes the play, and you could feel from that moment on there was finally a sense of belief that these Chiefs could go get it done.
I would like to stop and point out one of my favorite things in sports is noticing the weird verbs that get applied to very specific sort of actions. Like when a pitcher throws 15 pitches in the fifth inning, he's always laboring. He's laboring through here. He's cruising. I love it when defensive backs vacate the zone. Like they never leave. Yep. They never move out of it. He vacated his zone.
What? If you're Sala, I know, but if you're Robert Sala and you're the secondary coach, you're like, dude, all game long, and it's 3rd and 15, we're rushing for, Armstead gets home, even on a 9-step drop, 15 yards behind the line of scrimmage, all you've got to do is play your zone. And that is why language, right? We can joke around, and you guys do whole segments on Parsing Pete, and we joke around about all this language and slogans and the stuff that Pete uses, but it matters because he wants those guys locked in on every single play, every single snap. Never get tired of doing your fundamentals. And why the corner Mosley, why in the world on 3rd and 15, he's going to try to be a hero and run on in on the end cut, which, by the way, is covered. The linebacker had dropped underneath it. It's covered. If he would have just played his zone, there's nowhere to go. And as I said, I think the 49ers win. They don't. The Chiefs make the play, and that sure turned that fourth quarter.
Thankfully. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Question two. Brock, you got a fair amount of familiarity with the Mike Holmgren coaching tree. Andy Reid is the most successful of Holmgren's proteges, a group that includes Gruden, Mariucci, Marty Morningwig. What does Andy Reid do differently than some of the other guys that have learned under Holmgren?
Yeah, it struck me watching last night, Danny, and maybe it was Andy Reid sitting on that bench with Mahomes after a couple picks and fumbles, and instead of losing his mind on him, just he's his biggest hero, supporter, and fan. And I was thinking about those other guys, and there's not many that way. Gruden, certainly not that way. He you know, had difficult relationships and still does with basically every quarterback. You know, Mike was emotional. Mike Holmgren was hard, I think, on quarterbacks at times to play for and really challenging. And Morningwig was the same way. A bunch of those guys, but man, Andy Reid comes from that tree, and Andy Reid is like the most friendly, like, quarterback head coach connection that I can think of, and not even in Mike Holmgren's tree. Like, you think of sometimes the friction that head coaches and quarterbacks have. He doesn't. He did it for 10 years with McNabb in Philadelphia. He's doing it with Mahomes. I mean, Mahomes ended up being in the perfect spot for him. And landing in Kansas City with a coach, you know, that really, really believes in him. And that is something that you don't see, unfortunately, for, you know, I think in that Holmgren tree very often. And you certainly do with an Andy Reid. And man, even after the game, they asked Andy Reid, hey, what did you tell Mahomes after he fumbled twice and threw two picks? And he said, keep firing. Absolutely keep firing away. And that is going to be a relationship that I think will go on for some time and be a very positive one for the Chiefs.
Were you surprised by Andy Reid's opening game approach? In the first half, Damian Williams got 16 combined targets and touches. I was surprised by that.
I was too. And I think some of that was to set up a little bit of the play action game, you know, off of that, to make sure those 49ers had to think a little bit. You do not want to get in a game with those guys, Paul, where you are just dropping back and letting those four tee off, because their front five could not block those four. I mean, they just could not do that. You know, and you saw Mahomes uncomfortable for the majority of that game. So I think that's a former O-line guy in Andy Reid. And by the way, that's another difference between Andy Reid and a lot of coaches in this league, and certainly from Holmgren's tree, too. He's got that O-line background, that former offensive lineman, and he knows. And even going into that matchup, Paul, my five right here are not going to block these four animals. And if we get into a throwing game and we let those guys, you know, pin their ears back and go, and Danny, that's another one of your favorite verbs, pin your ears back. If they let them just pin their ears back and go, it was going to be even more problematic for Mahomes. So I think as much as anything, that was making sure those guys see the jab. Here's the jab. It's not just big haymakers all the time. Had to make those defensive linemen think just a little bit there could be a run.
Question number three. Brock, do you believe in the idea of certain players being clutch come crunch time? And on the same front, are you a believer that certain players and certain coaches in big-time spots are just chokers?
Ooh, I'm going to guess, Paul, this will be a conversation you have with your co-host, not only today, but maybe for the weeks and months and years, because I remember working with Danny and having this conversation quite a bit. I think that Patrick Mahomes' baseball background – And so much of that background and so many of those years of playing that game is exactly like number three in Seattle. And because of that background, there's a control alt delete and you can flush whatever happens at any time in that game. And as I said, two picks, two fumbles on that stage, a stage he's never been on before. I think there's a lot of guys that would get tight, that would have stopped pushing that ball down the field, that would not have made that throw on 30-15 with someone in his face. But that's not Patrick Mahomes. I think that is his wiring, which is very, very similar to Russell's. And I think that wiring was benefited immensely by the game of baseball. Does it make him clutch down the stretch? I don't know if I would say that. It certainly makes them battle-tested and hardwired for no matter what happens at any point in minute 1 through 60, they're going to be the same guy. Jimmy Garoppolo? That dude got tight in the fourth quarter. Jimmy Garoppolo had three third downs that he's going to watch on tape eventually. And I don't know if it was last night. I don't know if it will be this morning, sometime this week, whenever they do gather and he watches. He had three third downs, or kind of like Emmanuel Mosley. He just lost his mind. He lost his eyes. He lost his read. He lost his fundamentals. He didn't execute any of those. And because of it, he gave the Chiefs the ball back and an opportunity to do what they did. And that was win that game when it mattered.
This might surprise you, Brock, but I actually was very compelled. Paul didn't use baseball as the reason, but he talked about that, the ability to sort of shrug off an early game struggle or the fact that your first three quarters weren't what you liked. And that being, I do think that's a skill. And if that's what clutch is, like being able to hit Control-Alt-Delete and flush away what's happened before, because really, that's one of the big challenges in sports, is to try to get yourself back to the maximum amount of focus you can, to not be too high, not be too low. In baseball, just because of the sheer repetition involved in the sport. I mean, it's not just hundreds of at-bats. It's dozens of pitches within those hundreds of at-bats. That reset process does make it, I think that's an important skill to have. That's interesting. I hadn't thought of it correlating with baseball, but I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, and I think those two, and it's why there's a lot of respect that Russ has for Mahomes, and I think on the other side, right, any of these young quarterbacks, they all love Russell for his playmaking, and gosh, he is just dynamic and electric, but beyond any of it, the guy is just so mentally tough, and yeah, I think Mahomes and Russell, their baseball background comes into play, not just in how they throw the ball and how they move and the multiple platforms with which they can throw it, but I think just that mental hardwiring too of, all right, I struck out. That's fine. I'm going to get another bat. Okay. You know, the guy hit me. He hit that pitch. That's fine. I'm going to get another pitch. And, you know, just having that background is certainly very helpful for those two.
That is Blue 42. We're always grateful for Brock joining us for that. It's brought to us by our friends at Toyota of Puyallup. Brock, did you make it all the way through the halftime show?
Danny. I did not make it through the halftime show. I did think of you. I thought of our experience on Broadway. Once all the stripper poles came up at halftime, I'm like, yep, I'm kind of out. So you guys enjoy the dancing, and I'm going to go get another piece of brisket. And what else do we have? Some tri-tip steak and some other good grub. So, yeah, I was not down with the halftime show. And I know I'm a prude. I know I'm old. I know it was some creative, beautiful dancing. But, yeah, that's just not for me.
Very fair. Brock, thank you very much, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Always fun, guys. See ya.
The show Brock is referencing was Rock of Ages, and at the Seahawks New York Super Bowl, myself, Dory Monson, Brock, and his lovely bride Molly, we went to see Rock of Ages, and we were, if it wasn't the second row, it was the third. We were right up front. And watching Brock realize, if anybody's seen the musical or the show,
I have not.
Rock of Ages, it's essentially all 80s hair bands. Like, that's when it's set. And watching Brock realize that they're not even undertones. Realizing the subtext toward every single hair metal song was not, pour some sugar on me is not about dessert.
So this is where this comes from. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Warrant, when they talked about the specific dessert they mentioned, yeah, there was something else that was being referenced there, possibly. And the moment when I saw it was the lead singer or the protagonist in the play had a pair of nunchucks, because the nunchucks are huge in the 80s, and he dangled them suggestively from his midsection, and the other end of the nun, is it a nunchuck? Is it
the chuck?
One of the chucks was, I don't know, It was like 4 feet from our faces. And I looked over at Brock and I realized that had Dory and I not been there, he and Molly probably would have left the show. It was really something else. I love the halftime show. And people were talking about the lip syncing and I was like, I kind of don't really care. I thought Shakira was singing, but probably not able to sustain that. I thought it was incredible. I thought I loved the halftime show. I really enjoyed it. Probably as much as I liked Lady Gaga's performance, but I really enjoyed it.
I am really impressed by the shape that both Shakira and Jennifer Lopez are in, that they were able to do what they were doing out there, especially as all of us across America, we sit and we eat and we get fat and we drink Buds and all of that. It just made me feel so inadequate. Like, look at these two who are clearly, like, they're a little older than me. They are still living their best lives, and I am just sitting here eating chips and feeling a bit tubby. They were really impressive. And you know what? The big thing about the lip syncing, yeah, people used to sing back in the day, but their act was not about the singing. It wasn't. And how are you going to sing and dance in the ridiculous ways that they were doing over the course of that act?
That's how Coldplay happens.
Does Coldplay lip sync? I'm totally ignorant of this part of music. I generally know when someone's lip syncing. Is Coldplay, where they did the CD skip or something, was something that happened?
No,
with them?
They just didn't. That it was the boring halftime show.
Because
they had to be, well, depressing and still.
Yeah, all their songs are very depressing. Like, hey, let's play The Scientist. Everyone's going to be really uplifted by that one. Ugh.
I know there's one band you can't say anything bad about or their fans go nuts. Is it Coldplay or is it Nickelback?
Nickelback.
Is it Nickelback?
Yeah.
Like one of those, like if you say anything bad about it, there's just this torrent of like vehement hatred that comes.
You got to have the backs back. Listen, Nickelback, one of the most iconic Canadian bands of all time.
The second half performance of the 49ers. What do you have more questions about? Is it coach or is it quarterback?
Well, look, Kyle Shanahan as a coach, we saw what he did this year. We know what he can do. For whatever reason, he just got away from what he does best. And now maybe you wonder about it going forward, in that in the last two fourth quarters and overtimes that he has been a coach during, his teams have been outscored 46-0. And on top of that, that teams are 29-3 in the Super Bowl when leading by 10-plus points through three quarters. And Shanahan has coached two of those losers. But Jimmy Garoppolo, you have to look at him right now, Danny, and wonder, okay, well, where are we going with this? Is this improving? He's 28 years old, and while I like Garoppolo as a quarterback, especially a couple of years ago, where has the development been? There wasn't a lot of development, and there were a bunch of spots where he just had to execute, and he didn't even come close to executing, and they are going to remember that overthrow to Emmanuel Sanders, which was a perfectly designed play for a long period of time, because Garoppolo had an open man there, and he just missed him.
I look at quarterbacks, that there are sort of three tiers of quarterbacks. There's the guy that will kill you. And that's the guy that you can't trust to do the most basic things in your offense. Like that he's not reliable to do. And Jameis Winston falls into this category where he might be incredibly talented in some respects, but asking him to execute a basic offensive error-free game plan. Can you execute what is drawn up without making mistakes? And that would be, hey, maybe we won't win, but we're not going to lose because of you. This is why Mason Rudolph got benched earlier this year, right? And Mike Tomlin says, we're looking for a quarterback not to kill us. That's the first. And that's, are you a competent NFL quarterback? The second level of guy is the person who is able to get you in position to win each and every time that's there. So you have the guy that will kill you. Then there's the guy, for lack of a better word, this gets summarized as game manager, though I don't think that's accurate. I think of this guy as the bus driver. It's kind of Bill Parcells' old description of, hey, I don't need you to hug the corners. I just need to keep you to keep it on the road. He wanted a school bus driver. This is not a Formula One operation that I've got here. You just need to execute the plays that are called. I'm not going to ask you to do everything, but what I do ask you to do, you have to do. And sort of that second tier of competent. And I think Jimmy Garoppolo's shown he's in that tier. I think Jimmy Garoppolo has shown very clearly he's able to be in that tier. The third tier of guys, and these would be the truly, like, the good/great quarterbacks, are someone when maybe the play's covered up, or you've got a 50-50 shot where the defense is relatively in position, the quarterback has to make a play. The quarterback has to do something out of the ordinary. They have to, when everything else is kind of going kaput or you're in trouble and you need to make a play and everybody knows you need to make a play, you're able to do it. Where the coach kind of says, like, might not say thanks for bailing me out, but you're the difference maker. All things being equal, the better quarterback makes the difference. I think Russell has shown pretty clearly over a number of years that he's that guy. Patrick Mahomes is probably the best at it right now. I mean, three straight double-digit deficits in these playoff victories. And that's the thing that I think pretty clearly we've seen that Jimmy Garoppolo has not been able to do. It doesn't mean he won't be able to do it in the future, but he's older too. And this is what, year six?
Right.
He's been in the NFL a while. And while he's still young as a starter, I would have some questions if I was the 49ers. Do you have a guy who is right now Kirk Cousins like, because Kirk Cousins is making more plays in those stretch. Kirk Cousins embodied that sort of mid-tier, and the Washington, the team that had drafted him, wasn't convinced he was better than that. And I think he's a little bit better than that, but can you win a Super Bowl with him? Can he make those kind of plays? Finding that great quarterback instead of someone that's just competent is really, really tough.
Comparing him to Kirk Cousins light is such an indictment, but it's so accurate. Because Kirk Cousins made plays against the New Orleans Saints. Kirk Cousins made plays in the playoffs. Garoppolo was asked to do pretty much nothing in these playoffs. And when he finally had an opportunity to silence all of the haters and the doubters, it's not just that he failed, he wilted. He was bad in that stretch. He looked uncomfortable. He looked like someone you didn't have any confidence in. And I wonder how the rest of the team on the sideline, the defense, the offense, when they saw all of a sudden him getting his own head down the stretch, how they were feeling. Not only about that game, that situation right there, but about what's next for them. He's 28. How is he going to improve? Like with Russell Wilson, who is one of like three, I think, transcendent quarterbacks that can pull a team from the brink. I think that you definitely put Patrick Mahomes there, obviously, as he has been so great in these double score deficits. I think Deshaun Watson is at the very least trending towards that territory. But Jimmy Garoppolo is not trending towards that territory. In fact, I don't know that Jimmy Garoppolo is still necessarily improving. And when you do get to 28 years old, you have to wonder about a quarterback and his ability to improve. Do you want to be stuck with a quarterback like, I don't know, Matt Stafford until the end of his career? Are you fine with that? Are you cool with that? Matt Stafford, at the very least, has more, I think, physical talent than Jimmy Garoppolo. But, I mean, again, we're talking about Matt Stafford here, a guy who has been there for a long time and really has done nothing in Detroit.
How do you view Stafford? Is Stafford a good quarterback? Or is Stafford an average quarterback? Statistically, he's better than good. But you look at the effectiveness, and he's not nearly as – he hasn't won as much as Phillip Rivers, who Rivers, I think, is a really good quarterback that's just never had the sufficient supporting cast.
I agree.
I see Stafford as a step below that. It's really interesting when you start saying, okay, which are the guys that are able to get his team to victories? Because I know quarterback wins – a victory, you can have a great quarterback that doesn't win games and it's no fault of his. But that difference between a guy who can win teams with a good team and a guy who can take a mediocre team to wins is a huge difference. And we don't know how to quantify it, but very clearly, I think right now my scouting report on Jimmy Garoppolo was he's a great bus driver. If you need him to be the engine, I don't think he's capable of doing that.
I think that's accurate. If you were to compare Stafford, I would say he's sort of in that same conversation as someone like Matt Ryan, who they put up great statistics every single season, and you think that they're talented, and yet they can't do it all by themselves. Only a few quarterbacks can do that. It really is a limited amount of guys. But with Jimmy Garoppolo, I mean, it just feels like he's nowhere close to it. And it also felt like last night was the, it's done. This is as good as he is going to get moment for his career.
It's Danny and Gallant. I'm very ugly on the inside. Anybody who's listened for a fair amount of time has come to understand that. How ugly am I? Well, I'm going to count up my three favorite plays. They're not the best. They're certainly, well, maybe from one team's perspective, they're the worst. But they're my favorite, and that's next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Brock told us the most important play of the game was, what, it was the 40-yard completion to Tyreek Hill on 3rd and 15,
yes,
where Mosley got overexcited, vacated his zone, and came rushing forward, and that was kind of the turning point of the game. That doesn't make my top three favorite plays, though, Paul.
Okay, well, I want to hear your top three favorite plays, because you teased it with the idea that you typically do, and your hateful anti-49er nature. I can only imagine how fun these next three will be.
Play number three, my third favorite play of this game, is something that will be well, probably forever lost. I don't know if anybody even remembers it, but I have two reasons it was my favorite. But here, let's start. It is 10 minutes to go. 49ers are ahead by 10 points. They're facing third and 14.
And his team up by 10, third down and 14. Garoppolo is going to be forced out and then shoved out of bounds. No penalty flag as Rashad Felton made the play, and it's fourth down.
Relatively innocuous. Here's why it's my favorite. It was the first of two times where the 49ers needed a conversion and Jimmy Garoppolo failed to do his most fundamental task, throw the football. He didn't throw the ball. He instead kind of ran, and maybe you can defend it and say, oh, they didn't. What they really can't have there is a mistake. They're up 10. Here's the other part is he's scrambling, needs 14 yards. He's not even going to get anywhere close to that. But he's kind of going at an angle, and when he's still in bounds, he gets shoved. Like Felton gives him an effective two-arm shove into the 49ers bench. 49ers bench goes understandably nuts. At the same time, the guy was in the field of play when the contact was made, so you're not going to get anything. Kyle Shanahan gets murderous rage. Like, the intensity, if you see it, where he pulls off his headset, he is staring directly at the side judge. He points directly at the side judge, basically telling him, you needed to make that call, you didn't. Like, if you could distill, like, the anger, I respect the Old Testament fury that was present there. I also don't know if that's the kind of person that you want making decisions in the fourth quarter, where you want him to be emotionless, right? You want him to be rational. Like, there was a level of fury there where you're like, I don't know if that seems kind of unnaturally intense. Like, it was a viciousness that was in his eyes.
For those who don't know, I used to cover the Houston Texans, and it was eerily reminiscent of Bill O'Brien, who has been nicknamed in those who know the Texans circles as the teapot. Kyle Shanahan in this game, it wasn't just that moment, Danny. I mean, remember the offensive pass interference on George Kittle? It seemed like 30 minutes after the halftime show had finished and wrapped up, and after that play had been far, far in the rearview mirror, that was the first thing that Shanahan brought up when he was walking out of the halftime locker room in his halftime sideline interview. So there are a lot of things that seemed to get under his skin. There were a couple of missed calls, that missed offsides call that also could have been a false start on Kansas City in the game. He was really affected, and maybe that's just a natural, I don't know, something that comes out because he's coaching in this big-time situation for the first time, but he did not seem as composed as he needed to be.
Here's my favorite thing about that play. Kansas City was offsides. The defensive end jumped. It should have been a free play, which makes it even more inexplicable that we didn't see Jimmy Garoppolo throw it, but he probably didn't see the flag come out, so he doesn't know. It's watching that murderous rage over something that he was right about. I told you, I'm ugly on the inside, so I loved having that anger that was justified be vented in a way that was entirely unproductive. So that's my third favorite play.
How do you think he's going to feel from a homicidal anger standpoint as every single sports talk show in America questions his ability to close out games and his fourth quarter blown leads over the next couple of months?
Yeah, I'm not sure, and I can't say that I regret or am somewhat feel badly for him that he'll have to explain that. I like the fact. I think that Kyle Shanahan is an extremely smart coach. I think he's really good. I think he is what everyone thought Sean McVay was. I think McVay's a good coach. I think Kyle Shanahan is a great offensive coordinator. I think he'll be one of the best head coaches in this league for a long time. But I also think that he's got a pretty cocksure sense of himself, and that he knows and is going to, he's not going to take that criticism all of that well. My second favorite play in this game, and this one's probably a little bit more personal and maybe the meanest of all of them, but it was on a pass play down the sidelines where I don't know if old Richard Sherman would have allowed this to happen.
Shotgun snap, fakes the handoff, looks downfield, arching spiral pass down the near side, over the shoulder catch, rocking 20. Double teamed at the 15, down the near sideline, 10, knocked out of bounds! Knocked out of bounds at about the 9, make it the 10. 38-yard completion by Mahomes.
Now, I don't know if you noticed it was Richard Sherman in coverage. His number 25 might have been concealed by the two pieces of burnt toast that were on either side of his jersey. He got roasted down the sideline. Oh, too bad.
It wasn't a good game for Richard Sherman because it wasn't just that moment. There was also when he got beat to the corner for a touchdown by, was it Damian Williams on the second touchdown at the end, right, where he reached over the pylon? I know you're not the biggest fan of like just being able to reach over a pylon and get in. I thought he was out of bounds, by the way. I don't know how you felt.
I thought that that was the probably the best example of why you should have to down the ball in the end zone. And the fact that it messed over the 49ers made me rethink my desire for a rule change. I'm just fine with them taking it in the shorts. Or maybe now they change it after that had happened just to rub a little more salt in the wound. Yeah, I'm okay with that.
There was that play. And then there was another one where he was right in front of Tyreek Hill. And Tyreek Hill does this to everybody. But Richard Sherman reaches out with his arms for Tyreek Hill and just completely whiffs and fell. And he looked like one of those people in the Life Alert ads as he fell down. It was unfortunate.
Still a good tackling quarter. Still a good tackling quarter.
It's Tyreek Hill,
right,
too. Like, I give him the benefit of the doubt on that one. But if you add it all up, it was not the best night.
And here it is, my favorite play. And the one that got me kicked out of the group chat with all of my high school friends who are 49er fans.
And his team up by 10, third down and 14. Garoppolo is going to be forced out and then shoved out of bounds. No penalty flag as Rashad Felton made the play, and it's fourth down.
That was that third favorite play, the fourth and 10, where Jimmy Garoppolo, and it turned out to be, it wasn't the 49ers' last drive, but it was the last chance. They're down four, facing fourth and 10, and Jimmy Garoppolo, after three straight incompletions, ended up getting sacked by Frank Clark. Now, a couple of different things that had happened on that play that made it so fantastic. First was the weird two-handed flick by Jimmy Garoppolo as he's going down in the pile, where it was just like, ah, here, maybe somebody like, can do something with this.
Garo Yepremian, the Redskins kicker in that Super Bowl against the undefeated Miami Dolphins.
There's nothing he's got to do. It's just, ah, I'll just fling it. And he just flung it. Like, never has desperation. Like, no play has ever reeked of desperation more than that pass that was made there. It ends up being ruled dead. It wasn't a pass. He was in the grasp. The second part is that Jimmy Garoppolo, as he was being tackled, got hit in his helmet. Like, he kind of gets whacked in the head. And it looks afterwards, I don't know if people were appealing for a penalty, but the idea was, technically, you could argue that you're not supposed to hit a quarterback in the head, although at that point, it's a mosh pit. My favorite point, and this is what got me kicked out of the group chat, when they replayed it and showed that the play clock had expired. That the play clock had hit zeros before the snap, and if you probably shouldn't have been run. They should have been assessed to delay a game. It should have been fourth and 15. And that was when I expressed my sympathy over the fact that the play shouldn't have even been run. The play clock ran out. And that was when I got booted out of the WhatsApp conversation with my friends from Aptos, California.
They've
had enough of me.
On fourth and 15, would it have gone worse for Jimmy Garoppolo?
Who knows? I just know that that was freaking, like, watching it, and it's like, oh, that's too bad. The play shouldn't have even counted. Like, somehow that made it even better. Like, that there was, like, no, we can't really have run that bad a play because we should have been penalized for delay of game worse. Our incompetence prevented us from running that play. We should get another shot.
He looked hopelessly pathetic on that play. I felt bad for him in that spot, especially as he flailed it up. And I got it wrong. It was Yepremian was playing for the Dolphins against the Redskins, and that was the one bad moment for that Super Bowl. I think it was Super Bowl 7 against Washington. But yeah, he just was like, bleh! He flipped it up there. It was a bad look. Bad day for Jimmy Garoppolo, and man, going forward with this guy, yikes.
Well, that's the question. He's their quarterback now. What do they do if he's not any better than this? Paul's going to outline some of the decisions and possibilities that the 49ers have to look at next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
But how many players have come and gone? Great players, great coaches for the Chiefs that have not been able to taste this moment. This is Pitt. Kendall Fuller up to get it. And that will end this game. With under a minute to go.
You know, that last Jimmy Garoppolo interception wasn't even the lowest moment for Jimmy Garoppolo during Super Bowl 54. In fact, I think the most true reflection of what Jimmy Garoppolo is in San Francisco might have taken place during that awesome NFL 100 commercial to open up the Super Bowl, Danny, where you see Joe Montana and Steve Young looks like they're getting into an Uber to go to the Super Bowl. And then there's Jimmy Garoppolo being told to get their bags. Jimmy Garoppolo, it was a bad night for him. There was not one moment I think you could look at outside of maybe the middle of this game where you can say to yourself, yeah, this guy is someone that I feel good about going forward.
Statistically, it wasn't that bad, though. And you look at his statistics in the game, and the fourth quarter was awful. But before you got to that point, his statistics looked great. If they win, there's a decent chance he's the MVP because he's the quarterback. But you look at it, he finished 20 of 31 passing. And the fact that he was, what, 3 of 11 in the fourth quarter means that he was 17 of 20 in the first three quarters. Like he was, I don't want to say great because he didn't do that much, but he was really good. For the first three. He did everything the 49ers asked him to for the first three quarters.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, he really did. Over the middle of this game, he did shine. But the beginning with that little NFL 100 moment, the interception that he threw to Rashad Breeland early on in the game, the offsides free play where he takes a check down, right before halftime where the 49ers really, I think, showed how they feel about him, not calling any timeouts.
I agree with you on that. Both teams, neither team was aggressive at the end of the first half, and that's puzzling to me on both sides. I think it said that the 49ers were more worried about giving Mahomes another opportunity than they were about giving themselves the most of a chance, because they ended up leaving an opportunity. Even if Kittle's not called for offensive pass interference, they were at a point where they were going to run one play and then have to kick a field goal because they were afraid to preserve the clock. And on Kansas City's side, I think they looked at it and said, well, we're not going to we feel better about our ability to win in two quarters than we do sort of messing around and maybe giving them more of an opportunity here.
The 49ers, they traded for Jimmy Garoppolo two seasons ago. They gave him that big five-year, $137 million contract, Danny. And you would think, okay, that big-time contract, that means that Garoppolo is going to be the guy for the 49ers going forward. But if they don't like what they saw out of Jimmy G in this Super Bowl, in this playoff run, over the course of this regular season, they actually can get out of it. They can get out of it right now. Over the next 3 years, the final 3 years of his contract, it would only be a minimal cap hit for the San Francisco 49ers to tell Jimmy Garoppolo, see ya! It would not be that hard. Very minimal cap hits every single season. So I think the question becomes, what do you do if you're the 49ers right now? What is the correct approach going forward with this guy who you put a serious investment into and who looks like he's not going to give you any more returns?
What's your answer?
Do you
pull the plug? Because the contract, they didn't have anybody else they were going to pay. So it's not like that money's wasted because they had a bad roster and it wasn't like they had a choice between quarterbacks. They can't move on from Garoppolo until they have another quarterback, unless they think Nick Mullins is the guy, and Mullins had a huge game against the Seahawks. Because that becomes the question. It's not just the money that you're paying to him. It's can you get a guy that's better than him? Because they're a good enough team that they can't move on until they get someone better than him.
You're right. 2020 is going to be a very interesting season for Garoppolo, and I think he's on your roster next season. But I do think that you think long and hard about drafting a quarterback should one slide in the draft to your eventual 31st in the first round spot. I think you think about it. And also, in free agency, I also think that you keep your eye out for potential reclamation projects that maybe Kyle Shanahan can get a little bit more out of. I don't know if Marcus Mariota is someone that Kyle Shanahan looks at. I'm not a Mariota fan at all. I don't think he's very good as a passer. But is that someone that you look at and say, well, we like to run the football. Maybe this is someone that we can turn into a light version of Lamar Jackson, something like that. I think right now, if you're the 49ers, you have to start exploring all options. Because to go forward with this guy as the definitive starter, he's not going to get any better than this.
You're not going to be able to sign a free agent quarterback, though, right?
Probably not.
Because you've got a starter here.
Like, and
you can't go sign Teddy Bridgewater.
Right.
Like there's no player that thinks he's a starting quarterback is going to choose to come to San Francisco because they know that Garoppolo is going to be here. I can't envision a scenario where Garoppolo is not on the roster for the 49ers in 2021, both this year and next year. I can't envision them finding an answer to that.
You need to stumble into someone like a Ryan Tannehill reclamation project. And the odds of you being able to get that, especially after Tannehill did what he did with Tennessee this year, it's very low. And That's unfortunate for San Francisco because, he is not going to get better than what he is right now. This is Jimmy Garoppolo. This is the full experience. There is nothing out there that should lead you to believe that he is going to improve. Look at the receiving core that he has around him. And on top of that, think about the money that they're going to have to give to George Kittle, who is drastically underpaid, to DeForest Buckner as well. They have some real cap issues that they're going to have to address. It's going to hurt them.
That's definitely going to come to the center. Eric Armstead's a free agent this year.
True.
And someone who had a really, really good year. He does have a great assortment of weapons. What's the likelihood? Like, what percentage chance would you put? I can't believe that. I think I have a more positive approach or appraisal of Jimmy Garoppolo, where I would say, like, a chance that he takes a step from what we saw, that he becomes better than what we saw. I think it's like 20, 25% chance.
Man.
That he takes that step and becomes a franchise quarterback, like a true franchise quarterback, where he wins that game instead of looking sort of deer in the headlights ish and making some of those mistakes. I don't think there's no shot at it. I don't think it's likely, but I don't think there's no shot.
How do you take that next step? What do you do if you're both Kyle Shanahan, if you're Jimmy Garoppolo? Like, what is the next evolution of this guy who is going to throw two just boneheaded throws a game, who is going to turn the football over? And on top of that, he looks very unsure of himself often, and that's something I don't think he can really coach away at this point.
Well, he's got to get more calm in those late-game situations, or he's got to retain his vision. I would say that. The way he sees the field. Troy Aikman pointed it out that there was a play, and it was in the third quarter, where Kittle was open, and Kittle would have had the first down, and Garoppolo didn't throw it to him. And sort of what Aikman said is, I'm not sure what he's looking at. And when a quarterback says that, it means that, hey, there was something there in that play, the way it's drawn up, and for whatever reason, the quarterback didn't see it. Usually that's a sign of the quarterback's eyes coming down. So that's it. It's composure and being able to retain a view of the entire field, even when those moments when the pressure starts to amp up, because I think that's what got in his way yesterday.
Danny and Gallant, he is Danny O'Neill. I'm Paul Gallant. We'll see if he's able to fix any of those solutions going forward, but we can all agree on this. Even though the NFL season is done, which is mildly depressing, that Super Bowl went about as well as it possibly could from a Seattle perspective. We'll lay it all out for you next on 710 ESPN Seattle.